This episode of the MedTalk podcast is brought to you by MedTech Innovation Expo, the UK and Ireland's leading event for medical device manufacturing. Save the date for MedTech Innovation Expo 2024, taking place on the 5th and 6th of June at the NEC in Birmingham. For more information, please visit www.medtechexpo.com. Hello and welcome to this episode of the MedTalk podcast, where we discuss the latest news and issues in life sciences. I'm Ian Boland, Group Content Manager of Rapid MedTech. On this episode, I'm joined by Sylvia Smith from MyMinX, as we discuss the role of artificial intelligence and the role in wearables. We also discuss Sylvia's background and how she ended up working in the healthcare space following her previous work in the financial services sector.
So, Sylvia, thank you very much for joining us on the MedTalk podcast. Just to begin with, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to be on this MedTalk podcast. So I was born in the Netherlands, but I've been in the UK from adulthood. I studied computer science and I've been a technologist within the financial services industry for many years. So back in 2014, I helped co-found a startup called Delta Capita, and that's where my AI innovation journey started, with a specific focus on explainability. So I found that these days, with the likes of ChatGPT, people understand the power of AI, but also its dangers. And that's where explainability plays a role, to explain how the AI models got to its predicted outcome. So during COVID in 2020, I decided to start my own company called ATIS. So it stands for AI Technology Innovation Solutions, to allow me to focus on other verticals like healthcare. So where there's a focus on saving and improve lives. And I'm glad to say you've now developed deep tech AI solutions for both diagnostics and healthcare prevention.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things that I'd like to pick up on there. First of all, I think you've already alluded to your transition from financial services into wearables and the healthcare sector. Did that come about naturally, or was it just a field that you ended up being really interested in and that's just something you've ended up in now?
It didn't come naturally, but being exposed to other verticals, basically it's all underpinned by AI. And for us, healthcare is just another use case. And manufacturing and construction. But there was a real need for AI innovation in healthcare construction, which is very different from financial services, because that's where it's about saving and improving lives rather than financial institutions making more profits effectively. So that's really what resonated and why I created ATIS.
So if I can just follow up with where, you say it's not a natural move over, but what kind of technology or what kind of uses did you see of AI in the financial services sector that can be used in healthcare?
It's about the explainability, so the models. Mm-hmm. So why does it have an outcome? For example, in financial services, why you rejected for mortgage? So understanding is because of your credit score, the mortgage amount, at least you can see why you've been rejected. But it's the same for healthcare as well. So the first project we did was in chronic wound care, where 25% was misdiagnosed. So for the nurses, doctors then understand, well, it's a diabetic foot ulcer because ABCD, it allowed them to make a better decision. So in a way, it's the same, but it's just a different use case, wounds, other things in healthcare, but it's the same as in financial services.
I'd like to come on to, and apologies if I don't pronounce this correctly first off the bat, it's MyMinX, is it?
MyMinX.
MyMinX, sorry. So you ended up with, you have MyMinX now. Can I just, First of all, can you just tell us a little bit about Myomonex? I mean, in terms of, because we do see that there's a great move in the healthcare sector towards using the likes of AI and wearable stuff. But what does Myomonex do that you think that you couldn't have done before?
Okay, so basically the work we did in chronic wounds was diagnosis. And diagnosis is when you already have a chronic disease. So prevention is really where you can start to make a difference. So Myomonex was conceived because diabetic foot ulcers, understanding chronic diseases where about 50% of the global population has a chronic disease, and diabetes, about one third of the population has diabetes or is pre-diabetic. So that means you can still move the needle for the ones who do not have a chronic disease. So that's how Myomonex was born. So to actually look at the people who are not yet, have a chronic disease, and inform them of their vitals. We also put in non-invasive glucose, so we're the first ones to add that. So basically that gives people a picture of what are my numbers, but also with our monthly reports, we give them insights so they can address what they do based on the insights.
I mean, you clearly explained what's different about Myomonex, and because it's an incredibly competitive area at the moment. So I'm just wondering how you can stay ahead of the game almost by continuing to be, a standout in this area.
So that's a very good question. So basically our mission is to have a product that's non-invasive, but allows people to understand their body better. So as you know, a lot of wearables just give you numbers, but what do these numbers mean and how can they do something about it? So what we actually want to achieve is to be able to tell people you're not well. And why you're not well is because we know it's a combination of your blood pressure, your heart rate, and your glucose numbers are going in the wrong direction. So we want to be able to tell people you're not well or you're not going to be well and why, and then also what they can do about it. I mean, some of it could be because, you have to go and see a doctor. Other ones can be for different, for different reasons. So that's really what we want to aim to do. One of the interesting areas we're looking at, can we actually replace a blood test non-invasively? So looking at biomarkers, can we actually do that without a blood test? So, because normally someone is not well, you have a blood test, it tells you exactly, what's wrong with them. So that's the innovation that we really want to do. And actually it started from conversations with, the Ministry of Defense in three different countries. So why only have that available for the military so that they can isolate them and then determine exactly what's wrong with them? For me, that should be available to anyone.
Following on from that, then, would you describe yourself more as a desirable accessory or something that can be integral to health monitoring? It sounds as though, because, for example, I see lots of people that wear smartwatches and they like to have it to keep track of their fitness. Probably not necessarily the core health markers within them. But it feels like that you're probably onto something different in terms of, yes, it is an accessory, it is desirable, but it can have this important aspect to monitoring your health as well.
I mean, indeed. So, I mean, we do see ourselves as integral to health monitoring, but then it also needs to look good, right? So if it's ugly or bulky, people won't use it. But this is not just for individuals. So we also have a B2B offering where you can connect multiple Myomonexes to a dashboard. So that can be as a family, it can be as a community, or of course in a medical setting as well. So this means you don't have to go and see the patients, measure their glucose, do the ECG, take their blood pressure, but they can see on the monitor something is not right with this patient. Let's go and see them, or let's go and contact them. So, and also, So that's why we see ourselves integral, you know, to health monitoring for individuals and in a larger setting too.
That's interesting that you mentioned the dashboard there, because obviously we if you got family that you can check on their health. But I'm obviously interested in the fact that doctors can possibly look in on their patients. How much uptake have you had with healthcare systems for your dashboard?
Well, quite significantly. So it's hospital settings and also community homes. As you know, it can take like 15 minutes to go and visit a patient. So they see it more as a productivity gain. But it's quite a bit of uptake for that because of the productivity gain, but also marking out patients where something is not right. So, or if something's okay, you don't need to worry about them. So they were having very, very interesting uptake in the medical profession because of that B2B setting. So it's a dashboard that can be on the mobile phone, or actually a hospital dashboard integrated into the medical record system. So you have patient records being updated, but also the notification.
It's interesting that you've mentioned the productivity element in your answer there, because I was wondering why there is such a desire for these technologies right now. And obviously, at the start, I was thinking more in terms of why are users wanting to have these wearables that have the health markers and all that. But you've actually identified something that, you know, tries to help improve the efficiency of healthcare. Would you say that's a key driver for this desire for these kind of technologies?
It is a key driver because, as we all know, there is, you know, a shortage of health professionals, but also the efficiency drive. As I said, if it takes 15 minutes to go and see a patient, update the records, if you can actually do that remotely, at a ward level or hospital level, is obviously much more efficient. And that's really where the budgets are as well, right? Because it's about who's going to pay for this. And productivity is much easier to show, you know, that's where it benefits the hospital, the productivity part of it, not just having measurements, because they can do that by taking them, go and see a patient, but not having to do those patient visits. So that's where we see the real traction.
Okay. At the top of this interview, you mentioned a lot of aspects about AI, and one word that really stuck out to me was the possible dangers of AI. What possible dangers are there within the healthcare sector then that you've identified? I mean, lots of people talk about the amount of data that's involved and whether it's a case of everything's secure and all that. But I get the feeling that you might be onto something different.
So in terms of the AI and data within a hospital setting or care setting, the data cannot leave the hospital. Right, and so that's why we bring the models to where the data is, so it doesn't go to cloud, doesn't go offsite. So there's data privacy and of course cost efficiency as well. But in terms of the danger, is AI can still make the wrong decisions. So that's why the models need to be trained based on information from experts. So, like for example, our wounds was the models were trained by having a lot of ground truth, but there's still an accuracy level where the model can get it wrong. So that's important that, it's more a decision-making tool rather than it making decisions for you. So you always, eventually, it can be accurate for more mundane tasks, but it's always good to have a level of scrutiny from experts.
Okay, so if I can elaborate a little more there, because I think everyone sees AI as, well, certainly the layperson sees AI as almost like the silver bullet that can almost do anything, but you actually identify that AI needs training, it needs to be basically it needs a lot of work has to go into it for it to be effective in the first place. What when we were talking about dangers, obviously you actually elaborated on what can, you know, what can be done to prevent these. But I'm intrigued to get your thoughts on regulation and AI, just because it's something that I hear a lot on various different podcasts I listen to, not necessarily just in the healthcare field, about AI presenting this immense opportunity for everyone. But the if it's not regulated properly, then it could become a problem as much as it can be an asset. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think AI should be regulated. But I think we need to understand how a model arrived at a decision. And if you can explain that, you can say, I agree with it or don't agree with it. Then you can take an action. But the model can be, you know, biased due to various reasons. Could be because of the data. It also could be the model is learning false patterns. So it could be the model developer putting strong patterns in like 0-1. So the model thinks it's important, whereas it's not important at all. And then, of course, there's the interpretation of the model that can be biased too. So therefore, AI is a good tool because, you know, you can process a lot of data that an individual cannot process. But you always need to be careful that what's it going to be used for? So how risky is it? What you're going to use the model for? So if it's life-threatening, would you really rely on an AI model to take the decision? But if it's not as risky, then the AI models, I would say, the more appropriate to use and make a decision for you, because it's not high risk. So the regulation, from the way I understand it, it actually categorizes it between risky and non-risky. Same in healthcare settings, right? Is it life-threatening or is it not? And based on that, you have more levels of scrutiny. But the key thing about AI is being able to explain the models. But even the AI models for explain are, sorry, even explainability are AI models, right? So you have an AI model with an outcome, then you have an AI model for explainability. So can you actually trust the explainability? Because even that is an AI model. So you really need to make sure that even that is robust as well. And that's where you start to rely on more the traditional mathematical models, area under the curve, that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. From what you actually said to me, it feels like that any core regulation of AI needs to be at the developmental stage, when there's so much almost human development and training going into it, so that the model isn't flawed to begin with. Is that a correct assumption?
I mean, indeed, right? But as I said, the model can be flawed because of different reasons. And it's only when you look at how it made the decision. I mean, for example, using one in financial services world, going back to the mortgage model. So we actually looked at a mortgage model that had 98% accuracy and beforehand only 81%. So they asked us, can you look at this? So it turned out that the model developer put in location, so the different in places like Gloucestershire, Lanarkshire, with a 0-1. So the model thought location was very important. So then when you look at the top 20 reasons why a mortgage should be accepted or not, 12 locations appeared out of the 20. So you knew something wasn't right. So by removing the 0-1 and putting a proper number or scale sort of on that, then you had the usual suspect of credit score, mortgage amount, repayment history being the top of the list. So that's understandable, and therefore you can trust the model. Does that make sense?
Right, okay. Yeah, I think I follow you. And I think this actually ties into another question I've got, in terms of, you recently commented on a poll which showed that there was almost a lack of awareness amongst Brits as to what a wearable does. And I think it's a case of there's all this technology and all these exciting spaces being developed, but not necessarily enough awareness from the people who end up using it. I'm just wondering what can be done from industry almost to help that awareness. I mean, is there anything that can be done from companies like yourselves or trade bodies or whatever to help people become more aware as to what's being tracked or whatever? I mean, I'm not sure. I'm keen to get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of the areas that we want to address with MyMNX. So just having your numbers, measuring it, as you said, that YouGov poll showed 54% of people don't really know what they mean. So giving them monthly report with insights, how are you trending over the month, but also by the hour, allows people to track back, my glucose level spiked twice. That must be my cheese board I had in the evening. So, and we also had people said, I had a handful of peanuts when I did my washing up after dinner, and I noticed my blood pressure spiked. So these are the things then, because you're showing when it happened and they can trace it back, they can do something about it. And of course, you can share that, as well with a medical professional. So the other thing we're doing is we're partnering up with companies like Green Habit. So they have a program to start looking at what is the reason why you're trending in this direction, or how can you create good habits in terms of lifestyle elements, so food, activity, and stress. You actually find that stress is actually a very important component why you eat too much or you don't have enough exercise. So that's what you want to do. So working with companies like that, so that people can start to address it. So we're just the technology geeks that provide you numbers, and that's when we work with people, and that's what you can do about it. So combining what your numbers are, why your numbers are like that, and how to address it, that's really what we do with MyMNX, and where we're different from our competitors, I would say.
Okay, I mean, I think you've got me feeling a little bit hungry with all this talk of cheese board and the peanuts. but on a serious note, you've actually touched upon something there that you feel you've got the capability to allow the population to become more health literate almost with all this data at their fingertips. I mean, I'm guessing that you feel that this will allow people to make informed choices about their lifestyle as well.
I mean, absolutely. So, a lot of, unfortunately, chronic diseases happen because of lifestyle. So, and being able to do something about it, to tell you what your numbers are and what they actually mean and identify, at what is actually causing it, that gives you the tools to, make changes. So, and I also think, none of us are on our own. So I find it very surprising when I hear, I'm fine. I don't really care. My ECG is, off the scale. But always say to them, but hang on, in a year's time, being in the hospital, right? And you have your family around you, and they say you could have done something about this a year ago when this was first highlighted. Wouldn't you want to turn the clock back to that time and say, yes, I'm going to do something about that? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Sylvia, we're actually coming to the end of our episode now, but thank you very much for your time. I've got one final question that we always ask our participants, two rolled into one in this case. Then is there any exciting developments you can tell us about MyMNX going forward? And is there anything else that you'd like to add to our audience?
So MyMNX is available now. It's it's on the market, and we do have some very, very exciting developments coming up, but they're pretty much in the R&D and validation stages. So we need to make sure that these all are properly validated before we can launch. So watch this space, I would say.
Well, I'll certainly keep my eyes peeled. Sylvia, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for joining us on the MedTalk podcast.
Thank you very much.